we're just dicking around. It's fine.
Okay, give me just a minute.
Okay. Now I feel bad.
As you should.
Hey.
Not feel bad, because it's all right.
Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan.
Hello, I'm here.
How are you this week, Ryan?
Pretty good. It feels like we just recorded a show like 4 or 5 days ago, not 7 days ago. So it's like,
I think we did.
So fast.
And we also have a special guest with us this week. He is Busy Zombie Lord in the chat room and on Twitter. Lou Page is here to talk to us about PAX East. Hi, Lou.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for being our on-the-scene reporter. This is going to be fun.
Now, he's not at PAX right now. We should probably mention that. He's not still there. He's hidden under a convention table, just still reporting to us live from the scene. The Boston Convention Center.
That'd be really fun, actually.
That actually would be.
I really would hate to be the cleaning crew that had to clean up after that, too.
You camped under a convention table or the convention in general?
The convention in general.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah. So, Lou, how are you this week?
Not too bad. Actually, I'm on vacation, so this worked out good.
Nice.
Great.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I have a bit of a headache going on right now, but I turned down my monitor brightness all the way, and I've got the whole mood lighting going on in my room, so I'm hoping I can make it through this hour and a half-ish show, but yeah, overall pretty good. So we are going to deviate from our normal structure again this week, as Ryan pointed out in the pre-show. Normally we do quickfire news and then regular news and then what we're playing, but this week we are going to get Lou to give us a rundown of what PAX is, and then he's going to talk to us about what he saw and then what he got his hands on and played. So, Lou, do you want to dive right in and let us know what is PAX exactly for those of
us
who don't know?
Well, PAX stands for Penny Arcade Expo, and it's done by the guys who do the Penny Arcade comic strip that's been going on for about 10 years now. A few years back, they decided to they went to E3 and they decided that they wanted to do something like that for the public that wasn't for the press, and they did one in Washington, D.C., probably about almost 10 years ago. And they've just started doing them about 2-3 years ago in Boston as well. When they began, they only got small quantities of people, 5,000-10,000 people tops. They now get 65,000 plus.
Oh, my God.
So it's a full convention center.
Many gaming nerds in one place. I really want to go next year.
I didn't realize it was that many.
I had no idea.
Wow.
Technically speaking, it's not 65,000 all at once. It's probably about 30,000 that have three-day passes, and then the rest are people that have one-day passes. But still, that's a lot of people that pass through one building in one weekend.
All trying to do the same thing and see the same thing. I know I saw some of the pictures that Chinbeard posted and that you posted. I actually saw you in his picture, and I was like, ha ha! It's like, where's Waldo? It's where's Lou? But I couldn't believe the lineup. And I mean, obviously, that was like maybe 250 people, but like, man,
was 700
in the line.
His panel got 700.
Holy crap! That's awesome. I think that's more people than what's following him on Twitter.
Well, he wasn't giving the panel alone. There was three other people there with him.
Okay.
I think they were all followers, and they all seemed to know everybody else, and nobody knew who he was. So,
well, I'm sure they know who he is now. So that kind of leads us into what you saw. So, I mean, you take it away, Lou, however you want to do it.
Okay. Well, I'll talk about what panels I saw. They have an expo hall where all the games are on display and all of that, and that stuff is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at night. So I tried to avoid panels during the day so I could get my hands on stuff. So I only saw stuff that went on at night. And the first night I saw Dragon Age, the game, has done a deal with Funimation, and they've done an animated movie. It's about 90 minutes long, and I got to see a question and answer with the guy who's in charge of art design for Dragon Age, and he was the one that put together this animated movie and helped them write the story and all of that stuff. And so they did a quick question and answer with him, and then we got to watch the movie, and it comes out in May.
The whole movie?
Yeah, it was 90 minutes.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So, and it was one of the last panels for the day so that they could show you the movie and clear it out and people could go home for the night. So, and it was fantastic. It takes place in the Dragon Age universe, and it's a short story. It's not, doesn't have the Grey Wardens. It doesn't have a lot of stuff. It focuses on Cassandra from the second game, who is the Inquisitor looking for Hawk in the second game. And it's her story leading into Dragon Age 2 and how she ended up where she is.
Oh, that's really cool.
And the animation style was okay. They tried to do a little too much 3D, but it was passable. I definitely walked out of it thinking, gee, I might actually buy that when it's not $30. But but it was much better than I was anticipating, so... So that was the first thing I saw. And then the second night after dinner, I went to Retro Game Roadshow. It's put on by Wired Magazine. Their lead game writer, Chris Kohler, is a video game collector. And he brings on several people he knows that are collectors or curators. And then the audience actually brings things in and they go up on stage, they put it all on camera, and then they tell you how much your collection is worth or your item you brought in is worth. And I saw some really crazy stuff. A guy came in with the original Earthbound NES cartridge, which there are only, it's just a prototype. The game was never released here in the United States. For the NES. There was one made for the Super Nintendo, but the NES one was never released here in the US. There were three prototypes that were translated to English, and this guy brought in one of those to get it authenticated and find out if it was worth what he paid for it. And he had paid over $1,000 for it, and they valued it at about $3,000.
Wow.
And it's one of three of a kind. It was kind of impressive to see that. Another gentleman brought in a sealed inbox game of some role-playing game that was only released in Europe. And because it was still in the box and there was only like 50,000 of them printed, they told him his thing was worth $1,000. And then the craziest thing I saw was at the very end, one of the guys who helps contribute to the video game museum in New York City brought in some stuff he was going to send to New York City to be part of the collection. And one of them was Lord of the Rings, the Atari game. And the Lord of the Rings Atari game was never actually existed. They made one demo unit that was boxed and brought around to be shown to what they were going to display it for. And this guy had that one copy. And they said they wouldn't even assume what it was worth because it's the one of a kind.
I mean, like, I don't really do a lot of collector stuff. The collector's edition stuff that I do get, I unbox and then, you know, put the books on my shelves and display the whatever comes with it kind of thing. I don't ever do the buy something to keep it mint. Like, I don't, do you do that, Ryan? Do you ever keep stuff mint just in case it appreciates in value?
Not really. I mean, most of the stuff that you buy in terms of collector's editions, they're not really rare. You see them on the shelves for years. Like, for example, the Halo 3 helmet, like that edition I saw on shelves 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, the stuff that Lou's describing here sounds like it's like rare and unique treasures. So the closest thing I have to that would probably be like, more recently, the Nintendo released the 25th anniversary Mario Wii game, and it had like, it's like Super Mario All-Stars, but repackaged for the Wii.
Right.
And it did two limited runs, and I was able to pick up a copy for myself and my brother. But like you, I opened it and play it. I mean, it's, to me, the value it carries is the $45 I paid for it. I don't ever see myself, first of all, it's a Mario game, so it's not going to raise in any value. You're going to be able to buy those games for till the end of time, probably. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I've never actually gone out and purchased like a mint condition copy of some rare game that never came out, right? So that would be interesting.
And wide release stuff, though, I mean, it will have value eventually, because I know with I was looking on eBay a couple days ago to try to find Perfect Dark and Goldeneye, because I lent them to my brother and he went to have a retro game night with his friends and I never got it back. So I wanted to pick them up, and I found a mint inbox copy of Perfect Dark, and it was selling for like $400, and I was like, holy crap, like who has the foresight to actually pick up copies of games and just keep them perfect
for you'd be surprised. It's not foresight. Sometimes it's stuff gets left in a warehouse somewhere and there's a pallet of stuff. And that was actually one of the first things they talked about in the panel, is the previous panel, because I've gone to this every year. They talked about how things go up in value. And then this time it was how things can go down in value. And they showed a couple of games that I can't remember what they were are at the moment, but they showed a couple of games that used to be worth $5,000. But then somebody found a warehouse full of the same game, still mint in box, and that same guy sold them all on eBay. And so now they're all worth nothing. They're worth $5 instead of $5,000.
Wow.
So collecting games is something I used to do. Since then, I have actually given away all of my collection. I didn't sell anything. I gave them all to my brother-in-law when he went to college for something to play when he went to college this past year. So,
because, you know, you shouldn't actually be doing, you know, that college work stuff. You should be gaming.
Exactly.
Got it. I mean, that's what I did all through college, but it wasn't a good idea. So I guess the last panel that you have in the notes here that you wanted to talk about that I'm super stoked to hear about is the Pixels to Props panel, which is what we alluded to earlier with Chinbeard. And he works, what's his company called? Punished Props. Yeah.
And he makes, go ahead.
He does the a lot of Mass Effect replicas, and he also did Skyrim Mehrunes Dagger, which looks freaking awesome, that I think he gave to Veronica Belmont, and I was just like, oh, so want that.
Oh, he has tons of those now. He makes them on demand, I think, now for people that request them. So if you're interested, email him. He does make replicas for stuff. From what I gather, most of his stuff is actually WoW-related or StarCraft-related. And his panel was very interesting. It was him and four other guys who do prop making, and they walk through the safety equipment you need to do what they need, and that you need a respirator, and that you don't need fancy tools for some of it. Some of it you can do the same thing with a drill bit. And it was, they talked about the materials you use to make the plastic moldings and things like that. And it was really interesting, but it was way beyond my comprehension. When they started talking about wearing a respirator and needing a garage to do things, I live in a little apartment and it didn't. I don't have a respirator. I was like, this way beyond what I'm going to be able to do.
You don't have a respirator, dude? I thought everyone had a respirator. I mean, mine's sitting in the corner right now. I'm lying.
I'm sure. But it was a really fascinating panel, and I got to see a lot of cool costumes. That his panel had the most people in costumes there.
I can imagine.
I should note when I saw the Dragon Age animated movie, now that I'm thinking about it, there was an entire row of people in Hawk costumes from Dragon Age 2, and they called out, "Hey, we have a whole row of Hawk people. That's never happened before." So that was kind of funny.
That's cool.
Wasn't Bill and his brother actually dressed up as Hawk from?
Yes.
Yeah.
They were, and both several times I think I saw his brother and not him, and mistook his brother for him. So
they're identical twins, so it's probably pretty easy, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In fact, that was one of the reasons when I was standing in line waiting for the the panel to begin, I didn't go over and start talking to him because I wasn't sure if it was him or his brother. So I was like, well, I'll wait till after the panel's done.
And just keep your eye on him the whole time?
Yeah.
You know, you just yell, that's not creepy or anything. Run away. Or look away, I suppose. You don't need to run away.
Yeah, in a crowd that big, you'd probably stand up more if you started running.
And there'd probably be a lot of bills turn around and look at you.
True.
You mentioned the Dragon Age panel. I just thought of a question. You mentioned it's set between 1 and 2. Now, did they mention specifically why they're coming out with this now? It seems like such a tie-in thing. And I know they're doing Dragon Age 3, but it kind of seems like it's like right snug in the middle. I think we're going to get Dragon Age 3 like announcement probably this summer, but
there's already leaks. There's already leaks about Dragon Age 3 this week. I caught that today on the news.
Oh, really?
But they said one of the reasons they did this movie was with Dragon Age Origins, they did a bunch of DLC content. There was expanded story arcs with other characters telling from the story from other perspectives. And they got some flack for it, saying that it was a neat idea, but too expensive, and there wasn't enough choice in it to change the decisions in the Dragon Age universe. So they decided if they wanted to just tell another story, the easiest way to go was to just make an animated movie, and that was why they did what they did.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So there's, other than the panels, there's some other stuff that you saw, something that I'm really excited about, but you didn't actually get to play. So what I'm super excited about is you got to see, the notes say 20 to 30 minutes of Civ 5, the new expansion that's coming out in a couple of months. So please, please, please tell me lots and lots and lots about that.
Okay, so it was about an hour wait, but I got to sit in with the Civ 5 booth, and it's amazing. They build these booths, and they're all locked up, and you're standing outside the booth, and you can't hear anything going on inside. I don't know how they do it, but they do. And I got in to go see the Civ 5 Gods and Kings expansion, and they played through about 20 to 30 minutes of the game and explained to you all of the new things coming in Civ. And the big thing with Civ now is religion is returning to Civilization 5.
Yes, which, you know, I was kind of surprised because it was fairly well received, I thought, in Civ 4. And then when Civ 5 came out, there was no religion. And I was like, this was a huge thing in 4. And I was really confused as to why they didn't carry it on. But now apparently they're bringing it back. So is it the same as it was in 4? Or has
totally
they...
different.
Oh, okay.
They said that the things that they included this time with this expansion pack are all things that they wanted to include originally when they released Civ 5. But if they had spent the time doing all of this, the game would have released another year or two later. And so they thought that they would include this stuff as later DLC. Or in the expansion pack, rather.
Right.
And religion plays out kind of the same way it did in 4, but it's a little bit different. In Civ 5, when you look at the top of your meter and you have coins, I've been playing it, so I should remember this stuff. You have coins, science, and all that stuff. There's now a new
culture?
Feature. Culture. Now there's going to be a religion. And when you reach the technology where you get to create a religion, there's a new tech tree. And when you reach the religions aspect, you get to pick which one of the religions you want to make. And you're encouraged to rename it and do whatever you want with it.
Right.
But it begins with you make a choice in the beginning. Like, you'll say, okay, we want to be a nature-based culture. So you'll pick a religion that's based on nature. So you might grow plants better or provide better food for your people or be able to feed animals better. And there's a list of choices. And then based on that choice, later on, when you expand the religion, there's a further tree for that. Hmm. And you'll pick more choices. And slowly, you add more and more things to your religion. And if other cultures begin to adapt to your religion, you can trick them into joining your country and leaving their country behind.
Nice.
That's a great word for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I won't touch that one.
Oh, that's awesome. And so one of the things when we first heard about this new expansion coming out, Ryan and I were talking, and it was something about faith is now a resource or something like that. And
that's this meter.
Oh, okay. So how do you go about getting that? Because Ryan and I were having quite a joke fest around sucking the faith out of people and stuff. And
it's sort of the same way culture works, where you build buildings, and depending on how many faith structures you have, you accumulate points every round, and then slowly as your faith builds up, you'll cross the marker like you do with culture, and a new option will pop up, and you'll make a new choice for your religion.
Right.
That's okay. The same idea.
It's so just, there's no, like, little humans with, like, little ghosts coming out their heads or anything?
No. But they're also bringing back spies, which were in the previous games.
Are spies not in Civ 5?
Nope, they're not.
Oh. Well, I obviously didn't miss them.
Nope.
Although it has been, I'll admit, it's been months since I've played. I keep meaning to play, and I have a couple of friends that are bugging me to play, and I do want to, but I just can't find the time lately, so.
I hear you. It's a long game. It's hard to get started.
And the thing is, too, I know that it's such a time sink. I know that if I sit down, like if I were to start a game now at 10 o'clock, I could look down at the clock again and it would still be 10 o'clock, but it would be 10 a.m. and I wouldn't even notice. And I probably in that 12 hours wouldn't even have made it through like one entire playthrough. Like, and I love that about the game, but it keeps me from playing it at the same time. Because there's no such thing as like sitting down and playing 30 minutes of Civ at all ever. Like, you can't do it.
No, I've been on vacation this week, and since I came back from PAX, I've been so excited for this expansion. I've been playing it every morning while I eat breakfast, and I'm like, oh, I'll play for 30 minutes, and then I'll go do the dishes. And next thing you know, it's noontime, and I still haven't done the dishes.
And then you play a little Civ with lunch. And
exactly. But the spies work different than they did in 4. Spies are now sort of like a resource. Depending on where you are in the game, you'll get one. And then when your culture gets to a certain point, or you expand to a certain size, you'll get a second one. If you do a mission for that, there's now missions for city states. They decided that the way the game works now, if you're rich, you can break the game because you can buy city states.
Much how I win every game. I just go and buy all the city states and be my friend. Here's some money. Shut up.
Yeah, they have fixed that with this expansion.
Oh,
that's going to go away. Or it's not going to be as easy to do anyway. And depending on how many city states you have, you'll get another spy. And there's a list of things that can add spies. So by the end of the game, you should have like 10 spies. And you can send them on missions. And they're not actually a figure on the board anymore. It's a new option menu, and you can send them on missions, and you don't have to worry about moving them to a city. You just tell them what city you want them to operate in, and they'll go there and do whatever it is you ask of them, like start a rebellion or go there and sabotage some resources for them, or go there and talk about how great your culture is so that you can influence the leaders into wanting to talk to you. You can even get them to do things with causing a coup. You can cause a general to overthrow a country and things like that. It was really fascinating. I don't know how that's going to work with multiplayer, but with single player, it was very interesting.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait. And I can't remember the release date off the top of my head, but it did get a release date, right?
Yes, it's coming.
June?
I think it's June or July.
Right. I have a feeling it's June 12th, because if it was July 12th, I would have remembered, because that's like 2 days away from my birthday, so I'm pretty sure it must be June.
I think it is mid-June, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's Ryan. We haven't heard from you in a while. Hi, Ryan!
I'm still here. I actually had a question about the spies. Now, is there like visual? You said it's an option pane, so I assume it's like, okay, spy menu, I'm going to send them to Gandhi Town and make them... start a rebellion. Is there like a visual response to that? Like, do you see that happening on the board, or is it just like another menu that pops up?
It's a menu option like the diplomacy tree, where you'd open up the diplomacy menu. There's now one that's part of that that's called the spy menu. And it is, you're scrolling options on the right-hand side telling you what's going on in the world will actually pop up and tell you that your spy has accomplished their mission.
Oh.
And then let you know that you have a spy that's free to do something. The other thing that I saw for Civ 5 that was really cool is they're adding new naval units. You'll now be able to attack a city that's on the coast from a naval unit and take over the city.
Oh, yeah, because you couldn't do that before. You had to have some kind of land unit to actually conquer the city. You could bombard the city from the water, but you couldn't actually take it over. That's awesome.
They're adding destroyers and other things that are going to be land attack units. They're not going to have range attacks. They're going to be basically like land units for the water. Hmm. So that's going to change gameplay. That will make me want to have ships more than before.
I very, very rarely, unless I set it to, you know, you can have the land type where it's like a whole bunch of islands. That's the only time I ever have a quote-unquote navy. And even then, it's like just transport ships to get me from one piece of land to another. Because I always found that the, like, you don't kind of get navies at the same time as everybody else. And it was never like, if I'm fighting a war, I was never worried about their ships. I was always worried about their land units. So I never really built up a navy the way that, you know, historically empires would have built up navies. Like, I'm thinking specifically the British Navy is what's popping into my head. Like, I play as the Brits often in Civ 5, and I've never built a navy with them, which it seems backwards. So I'm glad that they're kind of switching it up like that. I mean, it's taken them 5 games, but you know, it's nice that they're kind of shifting the focus, I think.
And I should also mention they're adding new countries as well. I saw all the demo, every unit they showed was from a different culture. So I saw Carthage, I saw Attila the Hun, and then I saw somebody else, but I can't think of who it was at the moment.
The Celtic one should be coming, I think. Because that's
I think that's part of one of the other expansions that's out already. One of the DLCs, I think. But it was something like that. It was some Asian lead. Oh, it was some Asian leader I'd never heard of before. And I was like, well, I'm sure I'll know who he is after I play the game.
Yeah.
Sun Tzu, the Art of War guy, maybe? I don't know.
No.
I don't know anything about... I never played a lot of Civ 5, and you know, I had it, and then I think I bought it on Steam for like $12.50 before the Game of the Year edition was out, and I'm like, yeah, if I buy it on sale, I'll play it. And then the Game of the Year one came out, and I'm like, damn it, now I don't have all that DLC, so I don't know. I need to play more.
So you just got mad and never played it?
Well, you know, you should see my Steam library. It's a pile of sale items. It's like, man, I need to play again. I'm interested in trying the multiplayer. I don't know if I asked, but I'll ask now. Is the multiplayer kind of like a asynchronous thing where someone does a turn and you send it off, or is it like kind of like you both play at the same time?
As far as I know, you all play at the same time, but the round ends, and then you don't make another decision until everybody's finished their turn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounds long.
It's not too bad. I've played multiplayer a few times before, and it doesn't take as long as it sounds like it would.
Okay.
Because, you know, like, usually when you're sitting down to play a round of multiplayer, it's not like, say, at Hero Academy, where it's like you send your turn and you walk away. Like, everybody's like, okay, I want to make my next move. Like, you know, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And everyone has that mentality, so it doesn't take very long.
How many people can play at the same time?
I've only ever played on the same team as one other person, because I always play it with a friend, and then you play against the computer. But I think you can have the same as in the game. Like, however many, whatever your AI cap is when you're playing single player, I think it's the same in multiplayer.
Should give that a shot. Totally down for that.
I want to say 8, but I might be wrong.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it is, but...
Yeah, in the regular game, you can play with like 24 countries, I think, or something like that. So I don't think they'd let you play 24 people. That'd be kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing. Does chat room know? Does the chat room know? Chat room, 10 seconds. Oh, wait, there's a delay, isn't there? Anyways, if the chat room can correct us, that'd be awesome if you know how many people can play in one multiplayer game. So, Lou, what else did you get your hands on? I know there's a couple that Ryan is interested in. Not get your hands on. What did you see? I know there's
something. Yeah. So the other thing I saw that was I was really interested in is Steel Battalions was a old Xbox game that came with a controller that had 60-something buttons on it, and you piloted a mech. And last year they announced that they were bringing it to the Kinect. They were doing a new game with the Kinect. And they've been showing it all off. And I got to actually see it in action at PAX. The line was too long, so I didn't stand in line for it. But they had a guy come out and show it. And they've been claiming that you don't need a controller for it. It's all Kinect-based. And they were playing it with a controller.
Jerks.
And they kept saying, oh no, when we finish the game, you won't need the controller.
A likely story.
And I was watching them do it, and I don't see how they could play it without the controller. But what I saw with the controller was awesome.
Oh, well, that's good.
I think they've said, I don't know if, I'm sure the developers were there. I remember reading about this game saying that it would be played with both the controller and the Kinect, right? Because like, something to do with movement and trying to, because it's a... It sounds like such a cool game, and I'm actually interested in this, so I'm interested to hear what you got to say about it. But I thought I had read somewhere that the controller was supposed to be like a central part of the of actually controlling your mech, while the Kinect is more about issuing orders and moving around the mech to kind of like slap a dude because he doesn't want to do stuff, or throwing a grenade out the hatch or something cool stuff like that.
What I saw showed the guy piloted the mech with the controller and aimed the cannons and fired at stuff. And then things would go on in the cabin, like a character would panic because they'd taken too much damage, and the guy would try and flee the cabin and escape the mech to get away. And you would have to physically reach and put him back in the seat, and you'd have to stand up. At another point, he needed to see, and you're staring through a little viewfinder, so seeing things was really difficult. He could stand up and look through the top of the mech, and you could look around with the Kinect by standing up and looking out the top and turning your head. Hmm. And that was really neat.
Cool.
And then I saw them move objects like dials and things on the mech with their hands, but they didn't really explain what that was, but it looked really neat. So, it looks like they're trying to redo the original game as close as they can with the Kinect and not 56 buttons. So, it's kind of ambitious.
Yeah, and I did hear actually, and correct me, maybe you saw this, but on the original controller, like you said, it had 60 buttons, and there was also a button like kind of a switch to self-destruct, and the switch was covered with one of those plastic covers that you had like flick up and then switch to self-destruct. Yep. And they said that they actually recreated that. So in the Kinect, you have to like flick, you have to look at it with the controller, flick the switch or flick the plastic cover up and then flick the switch to self-destruct, which I think
I saw the button really cool. On screen, but I never saw them actually use it.
Oh man. when's it coming out? Probably this year, or
they were saying this year, but if they're saying that they can play, you have to play the game without the controller, and they were playing it with the controller, I'd say it's a ways down the road.
Mm-hmm. It seems like they'd have to cut a lot out of that, because even just moving movement with a Kinect game, I have not seen it done. Like I've seen it done in like this horror game. I watched a quick look on Giant Bomb, and basically the way you move is you lean forward with, like, lean your body forward to walk forward. And you turn by just pivoting your body. It's the most awkward, like, method of control. And, like, if they take that movement off the controller and move it to something on your body, you're gonna confuse. It's gonna be really tough for the game to determine what you're doing. It would be cool, but I don't think the tech's at that point. And it'd be really unfortunate if they, again, like, it's weird to say this, but it'd be really unfortunate if they tried to do that, because I think they're bound to fail.
Yeah, what I saw was great. If they keep the controller and they keep everything the way it is, it might sell me on a Kinect. It honestly might.
Yeah.
But if they take the controller aspect away and they make me have to stand in front of the screen and lean a certain way to move the mech, and that, then I won't be sold.
Well, the issue with the Kinect is that Microsoft really wants to position it as a you are the controller. And from what I've seen and heard in terms of Kinect games, like, I don't know if there's any of them that allow you to use the controller as well as the Kinect. Like, you know, minus the voice commands in Mass Effect, I think that's the first time, but that's just voice, right? But I'm talking, like, full-on body motion Kinect usage and an actual controller. I think they Microsoft wants to distance those two aspects, so maybe that's the friction they're seeing with that. I don't know, but yeah, it would be really unfortunate.
The first day of PAX, I didn't see any comment about the controller. They were acting like it wasn't there. And then it was the second day I started hearing people say, oh no, this controller is because this is the demo and we haven't finished the controls yet. And it wasn't till the second day that they started saying that. So I'm thinking that it might have gotten out that they were using it with the control and it looked so cool, and Microsoft might have complained and said, hey, tell them that they're not going to be using the controller later on.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Microsoft's, like, official stance on it, but I know that they're behind the doors kind of, you know, on the down low is, you know, the Kinect is for, you know, controllerless control. And prove me wrong. I mean, it's really weird. It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just all the Kinect games I've seen have been one way, you know, and that's like it's branded for Kinect. I mean, mind you, Mass Effect 3 is probably the first high-profile game that I've seen as it's better with Kinect. So maybe Microsoft's moving towards that. I've seen that in their advertising where they say, you know, play it on Kinect for advanced features, you know. But again, like Steel Battalion, this is a game that will require Kinect. So it's not made better by Kinect. It requires it. I'd like to see them stick with the controller with the Kinect to kind of, you know, meld the two. I think that's the perfect solution for that.
I agree.
So before we move on to the next game, I just wanted to say that we got an answer from our chat room from Boba Fetish. He said that 8 was the old Civ multiplayer limit, and he thinks it's now 12, but is not 100% sure about the limit on Civ 5. But 8 or 12 people at once, that's still pretty intense.
Game night.
Makes sense.
Yeah, game night. Woohoo!
Add it to the list. As long as BioWare stops putting out free multiplayer content, we should get around to it.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess next game, Orcs Must Die 2.
Okay, so I saw Orcs Must Die 2, but believe it or not, there was a line for it. They had four computers set up to play it, and you basically had to play with another player who was on the other side of the booth, so you couldn't communicate. So I kind of just stood back and watched the chaos happen, and it's just more of the same. It's Orcs Must Die with a second player. More enemies, more loot, more traps to set up. And now you have to work together with another player to sabotage the orcs as they invade. And so it looked like a lot of fun.
Is there absolutely no single player? It's all cooperative two-player.
They said that it has a single player, but the game has to scale for two people, what I heard. But it looked like you could probably do it one player, but it looked like it's designed primarily to be two-player. And there's the second new character is a female character that fights alongside this character from the first game.
Oh, okay.
Neat.
But looked like it was worth
It looked like it worked like just like the old game. All the controls were the same. Everything was the same. More enemies, more weapons, more traps.
Ah.
That's what they said. That was their big thing. It's more of the same, but with more content.
Well, that should be good. And do we have a release date on that?
Soon. I think it's in the next couple of months.
Oh, cool. Because it was only recently announced officially, right?
Yeah, and what I saw, it looked almost done.
Huh. Do you think it's going to be a super expensive title? Like, I can't remember what Orcs Must Die...
$15 was the original,
was
and
it?
I think it's going to be the same.
Oh, nice. I like cheap games. They make me happy.
Yeah, me too.
So, are anything else about Orcs Must Die, or are we actually blowing through this?
Oh, I mean, Lou pretty much said it, like, out this summer, and $15, like, that's a steal for a game like that, and those are the games I like to play. Like, for $15, if I throw $15 at it, play it for a few hours, I'm satisfied. It doesn't go on my pile of shame at that point. So I'm sold.
One thing that I didn't actually put in the notes, but I'm super excited about, is the Tomb Raider reboot, because one of my first PC games was actually Tomb Raider. So, Lou, what does this look like?
They didn't have a whole booth for Tomb Raider, but they had a video that they kept playing at the Square Enix booth over and over and over and over again while I was standing in line to play games. And it was a trailer for Tomb Raider I'd never seen before. And it looks to me, they keep saying, hinting that it's not a reboot. It's Lara Croft, just younger and different. And what I kept seeing looks like it's a reboot. It really does look like a reboot. It looks like they're taking Lara Croft and making her play Uncharted. That's what the demo looks like. So I'm thinking that it's going to be more like Uncharted than it has been in the past, which is a good thing for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've never played Uncharted because, as everybody knows, I don't have a PlayStation, but I have heard so many good things about that franchise that, you know, throwing Lara Croft into Uncharted does not sound like a bad idea to me.
So Nathan Drake with boobs is what we're saying.
Yes.
A less manly Nathan Drake with boobs. That sounds great. I mean, I'm actually really looking forward to this. I remember last year's E3 was the first game they showed at the Microsoft conference, and it totally took me away. Like, I was just like, it's so intense. It's nothing like you've seen with a Tomb Raider game, where I believe the scene was you're like, you totally are like just ripped to shreds, and you're in this you're in like a cave. You're like trying to, you fall onto this like bed of spikes, and there's one that goes through your ribs, and you have to kind of like take it out. And from what I remember, it was very, it's very brutal, and nothing like the other, Tomb Raider games were kind of fantasy-ish, you know? Like,
yeah.
Just this chick who runs around and,
Raids tombs,
breaks jars.
Kills dinosaurs.
Priceless heirlooms, just...
Yep.
You know, kicks pots that are probably worth thousands of millions of dollars. I don't know, but this game looks a lot more like a coming of age. Like, how do you get this hard character that is Lara Croft? And it's more of a, I guess she's 18 or 19 in it, and she's like just starting off. And there's like a
she
plane
looks
crash.
Younger. To yeah. be honest.
Oh well, that's actually even more interesting because there's not many games out there with strong, realistic female lead characters. Like, I think this will be a really great game and very different from what we're used to playing. Like I joke, Nathan Drake with boobs, but like, you have so many games with that Nathan Drake type main character, and there's not a lot with what they're going for with this Tomb Raider game. And it actually comes out in the fall, I think.
I think it's the fall.
Yeah,
I know that when I was standing in line for to play Sleeping Dogs, the trailer kept playing on the screen in front of me, and the guy behind me, it came on the first time, and him and I saw it, and he went, "What is this?" And I went, "I don't know, what is this? This looks really good." And then finally it ends by showing you Tomb Raider, and we both went, "Well, I have more hope for that than I thought I did before," so that's a good sign.
Nice. And then finally, Ryan, do you want to pick one more game from Lou's list that you want to hear about?
All right. XCOM Enemy Unknown. I'm on a PC kick lately, and I noticed you have here, you went to a 20-minute walkthrough. And I never played in the XCOM games, but I know they originally announced a first-person shooter. This is not the first-person shooter, right?
No, it is not. First-person shooter is on the back burner. They're not talking about it. They would not answer any questions about it. They did not want anything. This is not the first-person shooter. That was the first thing they said when you walked into the booth. Oh. And it was attached to the same Civ 5 booth, so it was like the same group of guys. And they were like, don't ask us any questions about the first-person shooter. It's being done by another company. We don't want to talk about it. We don't know anything. This is like the original game. And that was what they kept saying. Mm. And it is very much like the original game if you've never played XCOM. The basic premise is Earth is under attack by aliens. XCOM is a global defense force that's put together by the UN to keep the aliens from invading the planet. And you start the game by building a base. You pick where on the globe you want to put the base. And then enemy aircrafts will come in and they're like, there'll be a spaceship hovering over New York City, and so you'll send an interceptor to shoot them down over New York City, and then when the ship crashes, you send a squad of guys in to clear the... You send a squad of guys in to clear the crash site and take out all the aliens. And it's squad-based, turn-based, tactical strategy, just like the original game was, which is what everybody's complaint has been, is that they saw the first-person shooter, and it didn't look like the first game, and this does. The first-person shooter looked like it was from the 70s, guys in 70s suits with sunglasses shooting stuff and catching aliens, and this is like guys in body armor dressed like super soldiers with giant blaster rifles blowing up the sides of buildings and hunting down aliens.
Neat. And this is actually done by the same guys who are working on Civ 5, correct? Like it's same company?
It's same company.
Okay. Probably not the same team, dudes, but yeah. Cool. Well, and that's coming out in the fall, right? That's another one that's coming out pretty soon.
They were saying fall.
Oh, okay.
That's what they were saying, was they were shooting for fall, and I got to see a walkthrough of the strategy with killing guys on the battlefield, and that was very much you can move your character a certain amount of distance. There's no more action points like there was in the original game. Every character gets a move and an action, or they can move twice, and that's the way it works. And everybody had special skills, like the heavy weapons guy could fire at somebody and provide suppressing fire so that the enemy he targets at and fires at can't move the next turn, so that you could move another character around the corner and shoot him from a different angle and get him in a crossfire and things like that. And it was really neat. I'd never seen anything like it, really. And then the other action they showed was building your base. When you build the base, they called it the anthill scenario, and it's like you build rooms like... The object of the game is you capture alien technology and you break it down and reverse engineer it to make new armor weapons for your guys. And you build labs, you build hangars in your base, and it all looks like a giant anthill. And you can hire new guys because they warned you the game is going to be difficult and people will die. You're never going to get out of the game without losing soldiers. They're going to die on the battlefield. And and there's even a hardcore mode where it doesn't let you save. So that when a character dies, the only time it lets you save is when you're turning the system off. And other than that, if somebody dies, you make a mistake, lose a whole squad, there's no going back and changing it. They made that an option because they said that fans sent them hate mail saying that they needed to do that.
Wow.
So
serious guys.
They said they listened to the people that wrote them.
Wow.
And the only thing they didn't show was this interceptor mode shooting down spacecrafts. In the original game, it worked. There was a globe map, and you could assign the fighter to go shoot stuff down, and it would be a dot on a screen chasing another dot on a screen, like you were sitting in a UN room watching things unfold on a TV screen.
Right.
They said that they're working on that scenario. That's currently where the project is at. They have everything else finished, but that's the part that they're working on now. They wouldn't answer any questions about it. They wouldn't talk about it. Every time people kept trying to ask questions, they were like, sorry, that's something we can't tell you. So there was a lot of that going on there. But what I saw was fantastic. I was sold on it immediately. I love strategy games, especially squad-based. And when I saw that, I was sold.
That sounds awesome. That's actually something I might pick up. So I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the stuff that you saw but didn't play, which gets us to the really exciting part, which is the actual hands-on, what you touched and played and experienced. So I think Ryan and I are both interested in pretty much the same things. So I guess, Lou, if you want to take it away and start with whatever you want to start with, I mean...
I will start with Max Payne 3.
All right.
I've never played a Max Payne game before. I've watched friends play them. I never thought they looked interesting. They looked too much like The Matrix. I didn't care. Not that there's anything wrong with The Matrix, I'd seen enough of The Matrix.
He's dug a hole.
I know. But anyway, Max Payne 3 is that was the first question I asked when I walked into the booth. Do I need to have played the two previous games to understand what's going on? And they said, no. They know that the other two games are almost 6-7 years old now, and that most people won't have played them. So it's the same character, but they give you a quick rundown as soon as the game begins. He's a cop, ex-cop, that's down on his luck, lost his wife and his kid, lost his girlfriend, and he's a drunk. And that's all they tell you about his backstory. And he's hooked on pain meds. And the rest of the game is he now takes bodyguard jobs for money because he needs to pay the bills and pay for his painkiller addiction. And that he gets a call from a friend that's a bodyguard duty in Brazil. And it's some wealthy, I believe it was an architect, a wealthy architect's wife needs protection, and he offers Max the job. And so Max goes there, and it's very different. Everything I saw and felt, if you've ever seen the movie with Denzel Washington, Man on Fire, picture Man on Fire with Max Payne. That's what this is. Max Payne is a guy you kind of want to like, but he's kind of a jerk. And he shoots everybody and asks questions later. And the scene I saw was from an early part of the game, and I got my hands on it, and everything is like a John Woo movie. You duck behind cover, you push a button, and just like the original game, bullet time slow-mo happens, and you get to just shoot guys. And I was trying to play like I play Gears of War and shooting from cover, and the guy yelled at me and was like, no, this is not how you play this game.
You're playing it wrong.
That's what he said to me. You're playing it wrong. As I kept getting hit, and I was like, why am I getting hit? I'm hiding behind cover. And he's like, you're not supposed to stay in cover. You stay in cover long enough to assess where the bad guys are, and then you initiate bullet time, and then you kill them all. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I did that. I ducked behind the bar. The scene I played was Max is in a bar with a partner, and they're looking into somebody, and all the guys pull out guns and start shooting at them. And so I dove from cover, initiated slow-mo, and before I hit the ground, I shot three guys and killed them.
Nice.
And then ran down the hallway, initiated another slow-mo while I was going down the hallway, shot two guys coming out of another room, and then ducked behind cover, assessed that the following hall had four guys, jumped out from cover, initiated slow-mo, killed everybody in that room, and worked my way down the hallway. And it worked flawlessly. It looked gorgeous, which was my big gripe, is I always thought the old Max Payne games were kind of ugly, and this one doesn't look... It looks like it's with the Gears... I believe it's with the Unreal Engine that they did Gears of War with, and it shows. It looks gorgeous. I was very surprised, and there's two things that they decided to do with this. Because they're Rockstar, a lot of their games are very target-oriented, like in GTA. So there is a GTA control mode for this, where you can have no manual targeting. You can hit a button, and it immediately targets the nearest enemy, and then you pull the fire button, and he shoots them. And I was kind of on the edge. I said, I'm not going to play it that way. I'll play it the way I play every shooter. Hands on. Point at the guy, shoot him, and he dies. My wife played it right after I was done, and she played it with the GTA controls. And she cleared the rooms 3 times as fast as I did, didn't die once, and she absolutely loved the game when we were done. So I was like, well, then maybe they needed to add that feature. I didn't think they did, but maybe they did. And it surprised me. I was very happy with it. The trailer I had seen previously made me kind of want to play it. Actually having my hands on a demo was fabulous, and I was sold.
I was just saying, it totally sounds like one of those games where you're just like, I have had the worst day ever. I just want to go kill some dudes. So you like throw it on GTA controls and you just shoot everyone.
Yep.
And I was going to say, is it, cause it kind of sounds like with the slow-mo and with the auto targeting, it sounds to me like it's going to be way too easy. Like, did you find that you were just going?
It was very easy.
Yeah.
That was kind of my only gripe with it, was the only time I kept getting killed in the demo is you work your way through a bar killing guys, and then you chase a guy out a back door. When you chase a guy out a back door, there's cars in the street. Well, you can blow up the cars. And the guys
yes.
shoot the cars as cover. And I kept shooting the car too many times and then being standing next to it as cover, and the guy would shoot the car and the car would blow up and blow me up too. And that was the only way I kept dying. Guys trying to kill me didn't work. It was exploding things from cover that got me. The other thing with it was that was my concern was that you get too much slow-mo time. There is at no point did I shoot anybody and it wasn't in slow-mo. And it's a meter. But every time you kill a guy, the meter fills back up. So at least a quarter of the way. So I was literally killing guys. And I was thinking, oh, I'm out of slow-mo time. And then it would be like, oh, wait, it just filled back up. Why? Oh, I killed 6 guys while I was in slow-mo. So I filled the whole meter back up. So that was neat. And the cool thing was, not only do they do slow-mo, but if it's the last guy in a room that you shoot, it does bullet time with the bullet going into his head.
Nice.
And it like follows the bullet, and you'll be like, oh, this guy must be the last guy in the room. The bullet, it's like watching it in Fallout, sort of, except more gritty.
Nice.
And so it's like you show it, it hits the guy, and the guy flops on the floor, and they show him die ragtime.
That sounds awesome.
It was really cool.
That's out in May, right?
Yes.
Like a month.
So this is actually like the finished version of the game. They're not going to tweak the like slow-mo filling up too fast or anything like that. Like it's already done, coded.
They said that they were basically fixing bugs at this point, and that was it. It was on bug fix, and that the full game was coming. And the guy that showed me the demo said they might have a demo coming to Xbox 360.
Nice.
But I found out earlier today that's not true. I forget what gaming site reported it, that one of the guys there was saying that and that it's not going to get an Xbox or PlayStation 3 demo. Oh. You're going to have to buy it to play it.
Oh, okay.
Which was kind of a bummer because I had just finished writing an article that said, demo might be coming in a few months.
It's they not. Totally burst your bubble, eh?
Yes.
Neat. Game.
The next thing I played that you guys might be interested in is Sleeping Dogs. It was basically one of those GTA clones a couple months ago with a different name. And Square scrapped the whole game, scrapped everything, changed the name to Sleeping Dogs, and nobody knew what the hell it was.
I was going to say, I've never heard of this before.
This is it was a franchise that was put out by Activision called True Crime.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the name.
Hong Kong, and then they canned it, and then Square Enix bought the team and the game, and then changed the name, right? Yeah. I don't know. I think it's the same. It's the same game, right? But so when they showed it originally as True Crime Hong Kong, it's like, this is an interesting idea, but it doesn't look anything like True Crime, which Crime was never really anything to write home about. But anyways, I'll let you go.
It is nothing like True Crime. I've played the first True Crime, and it was basically a GTA clone. This is not a GTA clone in any way, shape, or form that I played. There's vehicle driving, which they didn't show, and there's gunplay, which they didn't show. I got to see a guy play those things, and he made it look really cool. But the hands-on playable demo I got was the fighting system. The basic premise is you're like a Yakuza gang member or undercover cop of some kind, and you're trying to help the other guys catch these other bad guys. And it was basic generic Mafia Man plot, and it was like, go find Billy and teach Billy a lesson. And that was the demo, and I was like, oh, this is going to be boring. And so I chased this guy, and it turned into a chase scene. And it wasn't like the chase scenes where you're like, oh god, I hate having to be just behind a guy. They did a really good job of keeping the pacing so that you knew where he was at all times, and there was no chasing the camera and did he go down to the left or did he go to the right. You could always see where he was or what he climbed up on top of so that you knew that was where you had to go next. And all you had to do was push buttons, and you jumped on top of stuff. You jumped on top of things, and then finally you'd catch up with him, and it turned into a brawler where you punched, kicked, grabbed, blocked, and threw guys into stuff, picked trash cans up off the side of the road and threw them at guys. But it reminded me of the Yakuza games for PlayStation in the fighting style, except grittier. I took a guy's face and shoved it into a moving metal fan, and it just went. And then I picked up another guy that I needed to question and threw him in a trash container, like a giant trash container, nice. Like a dumpster.
Oh, okay.
And I shut the dumpster and then made him talk to me from within the dumpster. It was interesting. It was not what I expected. I was expecting Grand Theft Auto, and what I got was more linear and much still gritty, but it was much more focused. The fighting, the hand-to-hand fighting looked awesome. What I saw of the driving looked eh, and what I saw of the gunplay looked eh, but the hand-to-hand fighting looked like it was awesome, and it felt awesome, so I kind of want to play more. I wish they had shown more.
Do you get the idea that this game is more about the brawling rather than the driving around and shooting?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yes. Then.
It looks like it takes place in either Hong Kong or Tokyo. I couldn't tell which. They didn't really do a good job explaining which it was. And it's all in English, so I couldn't go by what they were speaking either. So they all looked Asian, and they all looked like they were part of a mob, so I assumed Yakuza. But they could have been Hong Kong, and they could have been triads, but I don't know.
Well, if the original game, I'm just going to make a leap. If the original game was like True Crimes Hong Kong, maybe they just kept the setting.
I'm guessing, yeah. But they didn't do a good job of explaining that.
No, and I mean, again, it's a demo, so I'm sure they'd set that up at the start of the game. So, I mean, we could probably do a quick search and find out. Either way, it sounds really awesome, whether it's based in Hong Kong or Tokyo. I think either location would be really cool. It sounds interesting. I mean, really, the combat sounds a lot like Arkham City, which someone mentioned
very
in the chat
much
room.
So.
I think Ryan, awesome. Hey, checking the chat room.
You know what? Until you just called me on it, that was the perfect kind of like, you know, the chat room says, yes, wow. But now we've wasted 30 seconds explaining that Ryan checked the chat room. But yeah, it sounds a lot like Arkham City and And the cool thing about, and Arkham City had the open elements, and the best part about that game was the combat, not necessarily the, you know, navigation and flying around and stuff, right? So maybe Sleeping Dogs has its place in the combat being super awesome. Like, shoving a guy's face into a metal fan sounds like super awesome.
Does that make us bad people?
No, it makes us perfect people, because then we won't do it in real life. Come on.
You need an outlet for your face to fan smashing.
It's been a while, Jocelyn. It's been a while. Starting to get the shakes. This is a video podcast. You can see my hands kind of.
Oh, man. So in the interest of time, Rye, I think we need to maybe pick one title each to get Lou to talk about, and then I think we've got to get going.
Oh, snap. So, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, do you have one specifically that you want to hear about?
I think out of the list, Fable Heroes interests and not because I don't know a lot about it, and I like Fable, so that would be my pick. So if you want to grab another one.
So, go. Fable Heroes, Lou. What did you think about that one?
It was interesting. If you've ever played Castle Crashers for Xbox or PlayStation, basically think Castle Crashers with all the Fable characters from all the Fable games.
Oh,
And they all look like they're made out of yarn with button eyes and things like that.
Weird.
And you walk around in a yarn-looking world in a 3D environment, beating up, brawling guys, leveling up, and unlocking other characters.
Neat.
It wasn't anything fancy. It wasn't anything unbelievable, but it looked like it was a ton of fun. And I believe it's going to be a downloadable game. It's not going to be...
I was going to say, this Fable Heroes is not another full Fable title. I'm not sure what the delivery is going to be, whether it's going to be downloadable or what, but it's not a full standalone title, right? Like, not a full length. Like, I mean, Fable was, God, how many hours? Or, like, Fable 3, I mean,
would
was...
be, 30 plus 30.
Yeah. So and so it's not that long.
Yeah, this one is pegged as an XBLA game, which I believe is coming out in the next few months, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually you mentioned the doll, like the doll aesthetic, like the way the characters are made up. I was looking into it I was hearing about it a couple days ago, how the dolls are similar to what you saw in Fable 1. I don't know if you guys remember that game. Or they had dolls in it. You could collect the hero dolls, and you could get like all the characters, even the characters that they mentioned in the game, but you didn't really see. So I think maybe that's where like the characters come from in terms of collecting the dolls in the game.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, but I don't think they had them in the second one, like the dolls.
No, I don't think they did. I didn't remember them.
Neither do I.
I played Fable when it first came out, and only like briefly. And then I've played 2 and I've played 3, and I don't remember dolls at all. So
no, I mean, I did. Going to PAX, I didn't even know that they were dolls. I happened to be checking my email on the train to Boston, and something about Fable Heroes came up, and I clicked on it and was like, wait, Fable Heroes means they're dolls? Okay. And so when I got there and saw it, I was like, well, this looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen any screenshots or trailers for this at all. So until you said that, I had no idea. That's actually really cool, though.
It's very button bashing and, you know, which basically an old school brawler.
Sounds like a lot of co-op fun. So 4-player co-op?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a co-op game. Oh, so it's not even... Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Neat. And you did mention, I don't know if they had this at PAX, but Jocelyn was saying this isn't the next Fable disc, like full game. And I guess the next one will be Fable the Journey on Kinect. Now, that they didn't talk about that when they were there, did they?
They did not talk about that at all.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know where Fable 4 is in development, because I know Peter Molyneux just walked away. So yeah. I don't know if Fable 4 is even in future projects.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah,
I love the Fable universe
on that. But yeah, we'll see how, like, they're kind of running I mean, this sounds great. I was worried because it sounded like Fable was kind of being run in the ground. Like they did a lot with Fable 3 that people weren't ecstatic about. I mean, I know, Jocelyn, you played it and you loved it, and I need to get back to it, but people were really complaining about Fable the Journey and how it seems like, okay, now you're treating this as a franchise and you're just slapping it onto things. And mind you, I have not played it yet, so mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to be like. But I'm really glad to hear that this seems to be a cool little game. So, and it's not just like Microsoft saying, okay, what can we do with Fable to keep the brand out there? You know, mm-hmm. That's great actually to hear that it's kind of neat. You got hands on. So did you like it?
I loved it.
Okay.
It played really well. It was a lot of fun. It had a great score mechanic. And that was kind of one of the features at PAX, was every day from 1 to 2, they brought out developers to play it against. And if you beat the developer, you got entered in a contest to win a custom one-of-a-kind Fabled Heroes Xbox 360. Only one exists.
Wow.
And a 10 or 12-year-old kid walked away with it at the end of the convention.
Of course.
Awesome. Was he trash-talking?
I have no idea. I was usually in a line somewhere at 1 o'clock, so I never got to actually play against any of the developers. But I got to see pictures afterwards. They put it up on their Twitter account that it was like a 12-year-old kid that won.
Nice. Okay, well, I think my pick for a game I really want to hear about is Terra, because, like I said, I've started playing WoW, and I'm really liking the world of MMOs, so I want to hear about Terra.
Let me start by saying Terra is more action-y than your typical MMO. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Oh, no.
Their big selling point that they tried to tell me as soon as I walked over to the booth is, our servers are in Chicago, so we can get to each side of the country equally. And that's important to our game because it's very action-oriented. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't play MMOs, but... Why should I care about this? And he's like, it's action-y. I'm like, okay.
That's the actual word they used? Action-y?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You're not waiting for your character to unfold an attack. You're actually fighting like you would in Fable. That was what they kept trying to tell me. And there was a reticle on the screen that you pointed and aimed and fired things at the enemies. I don't know if it was maybe the demo I played. It seemed overtly hard, like it was designed for party mechanics, and the demo was single player only.
Okay.
So I kept getting killed, and
never fun.
And I was like, and then after the third death, and having to wait to respawn, and having the guy tell me it was okay.
It's okay, Lou. Calm down. You can go play Fable Heroes right after.
Yeah, it was like, it's okay. This is going to happen. And I was like, well, then I don't think this is for me.
Oh, no.
Aw.
Poor Terra.
Now,
and the art design didn't really sell me either. It looked like they were trying to do a cross between Final Fantasy art and WoW.
You know, you mentioned that they kept selling that it's actiony, where he might have thought maybe your main complaint with MMOs, rather than being a paid subscription and a time sink, was that the combat is literally like, okay, walk up to a dude, target him, punch a bunch of buttons, move on. So this sounds like it's more of a, like you said, Fable, and to me that sounds interesting, because one of the worst parts about MMOs is all the combat is kind of the same setup. But then again, every MMO that comes by and says, we have non-MMO combat for your MMO, which is great if you're going to play like us, like a couple hours a night. But if you're going to play 20 hours a day, that could get – you could hate it, because you're going to die a lot. You're not going to be able to farm as easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of takes an MMO and turns it into a regular game, because some people play MMOs just to have that time sink, you know, to – farm silk for 6 to 7 days of the week, you know? So it's interesting how most of these MMOs that come out and take the action-y route usually fail, because they capture this weird part of the market, you know, that's you know, people who aren't happy with WoW combat but still like the idea of playing online with a bunch of their friends. So it's interesting.
The other thing that didn't sell me on it was the first thing I asked was, is it free to play or pay to play? And everybody there seemed to have a free to play MMO, and they went, oh no, it's going to be $15 a month. And I went, you're already starting to lose me there.
Yeah. See, like, I mean, I don't mind paying $15 a month for WoW because, like I've mentioned before, I play with Joel. It's something we do together. It's really, really fun because it's like a couple thing. I don't have Star Wars because I don't really want to pay yet another subscription. So, like, if I haven't gone for Star Wars, which I know is awesome, then I'm probably not going to take a chance on something like Terra because, you know, again, another subscription? Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, the thing with subscriptions and MMOs, most people do say nowadays, it's like, is it free to play? No. Most of these MMOs start out pay to play, and that's mostly just to recuperate costs, because developing an MMO is, and again, this is a lot of people's theories, this hasn't necessarily been proven, because some free to play models work really well, but most of these launch with a pay to play just as a form to compensate costs. So DCO Online, I don't know whether it's damage control or not, but when it came out, it was pay to play. And then, like, 9 months later, they went free-to-play. And most people saw that. And that was a steady decline as, like, servers were shut down, player base went down, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then in damage control, people were saying, like, oh, free-to-play, that's the death nail. And they said, we always wanted to be free-to-play, no question about it. We just had to recoup costs, so we had to do pay-to-play to start. And now that we've kind of got to a point where, you know, we have our stable core players, we can do free-to-play and add content on a pay-by-pay basis, right? So who's to say if Terra survives long enough, it'll probably turn free-to-play. But not all MMOs will. I mean, if they're making, like, look at Rift. Like, I think Rift mm-hmm. is still pay-to-play. And it, I mean, it's doing
it
well
is,
enough
yeah.
that it can charge. So yeah. it's
the
weird.
Price of the game has dropped really significantly, though. Like, you can usually pick up a copy of Rift. I see it pretty regularly for $10 to $20.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when it first came out, it was, you know, whatever, 60.
If it's so. Telling, Rift was thrown in with every PAX bag when you walked through the door.
Oh, really?
Cool.
Nice. I always meant to start Rift, and I just never did.
They
shockingly.
They had a few, like, open weekends that I tried, and it's... It's interesting. Like, I always like trying new MMOs risk-free. So when they have, like, an open beta, I like to jump in there and kind of play around. Rift was kind of cool. I never made it very far, but it was kind of like a more realistic WoW in the sense of the graphics and everything. A same mm-hmm. kind of fantasy look, but it was definitely interesting.
Not quite as cartoony?
No, it was more... towards realistic looking graphics in a fantasy world, like kind of looked a little Lord of the Rings ish, like the movies kind of.
Okay,
it was
cool.
Kind of neat.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for this week. Anyone have any last thoughts on the games we've talked about, or are we good to go to listener feedback?
Well, I was going to say, Lou, is there anything else about PAX that you want to drop in before we move on? Just some, maybe if we skipped over something that really, really want to get off your chest.
No, I think that's it.
Oh, cool.
Fabulous. Okay, so that brings us to listener feedback. We are all out of iTunes reviews, so we thank everyone who sent them in because that is the best way for our podcast to get new listeners. We're no longer new and noteworthy here, but we do still appreciate every review that we've gotten, and if you leave us a 5-star review, then we will read it here on the show. We don't have any listener feedback this week, except we did get an email from Val about the Mass Effect 3 ending, and so we will probably be discussing that next week, maybe. we're trying to steer away from all the Mass Effect talk, so I think we did a good job this week, guys.
Till you mentioned it.
Well, it's in the notes.
I'm just kidding. Yes, we're doing really well. You know, one step at a time, we'll get there.
Yep. So if you want your email read in this section, you can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. You can visit us on the web at www.gamersinpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GIS Gamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also follow Lou. He is at Busy Zombie Lord on Twitter. You can also find our show on Facebook at facebook.com/thegamersinn. And also on Google Plus. So, Lou, is there anything else that you would like to plug before we go?
You can find my writings over at alt.games.com.
Fantabulous. So, before we go, I just wanted to give another quick shout-out and thank you to my brother Greg for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online, who drew our Twitter avatars. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic at www.starcrossedonline.com. He posts a new comic every Monday, so check him out. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week.
I've never been to PAX East, but it sounds like we really didn't miss much, Jocelyn, because of the whole boob ban and PAX pox. I mean, I could just go downtown for that. Good night.
You know, keep it all together. Keep the boobs together. And keep them away from the children.
No. You gotta keep them separated.
Oh, God. Ryan's gonna start singing again.
No.
I didn't butcher your show notes too bad, did I?
No, dude. They're good.
If anything, you did our jobs, which we thank
you. We were normal last week, dude. So far tonight, I'm into whips and cannibalism. Thank you, chat room.
Oh, I see.
I don't...
You mean the big yellow one right in the middle of the document?
I read it, but I stopped halfway through. I could just... Okay, you know what? We do 16 episodes where we follow the document line by line, and then you switch it up, and then you're upset? I was going to say, you can go to Halifax early... and play poker. They have the internet in Halifax, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I really hope so, because I'm totally not going to move if they don't have the internet.
I'm pretty sure the TCC is done by tin cans and string, right?
I think so.
Yeah. It's a tough setup.
I know. But they seem to rock it, so.
The audio quality is great. Yeah. They must be using some high-quality soup cans. Chunky noodle soup,
the big
probably.
Chunky one, yeah.